The Voices of Search podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything podcast network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com. Welcome to the Voices of Search podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything podcast network. Ready to expedite your company's organic growth efforts? Sit back, relax, and get ready for your daily dose of search engine optimization wisdom. Here's today's host of the Voices of Search podcast, Tyson Stockton.
Hey, what's going on? My name is Tyson from Previsible.io, and in this episode, we're going to be discussing content bloat. Joining me today is Constant Ijuma, who is the VP of SEO at Penske Media. Penske Media, which is a media organization with robust portfolio of iconic brands in the entertainment, fashion, and lifestyle verticals.
And this podcast is also sponsored by Ahrefs. What if I told you that you could monitor your website's SEO health, backlinks, and organic rankings at no costs? Sounds too good to be true? Well, it's not. Because my friends at Ahrefs just launched Ahrefs Webmaster Tools. Ahrefs' new Webmaster Tools product quickly helps you improve your site's visibility by pointing solutions to over 100 technical issues that might be holding your search performance down. Plus, AWT monitors for backlinks so you'll know the most linked to pages and how those links are affecting your rankings. And AWT shares what keywords your website ranks for and compares how you stack up against competitors for key metrics like search volume, keyword difficulty, and traffic value. Look, monitoring your website used to require multiple expensive tools. And now, thanks to Ahrefs, that's not the case anymore, because AWT will help you monitor your SEO health, backlinks, and keywords for free. And no, it's not one of those 14-day free trial offers. It's a powerful site audit tool that will keep working for you for free. So check out Ahrefs Webmaster Tools at ahrefs.com/AWT. That's ahrefs.com/AWT.
And as I mentioned, today we're going to be discussing the dangers of content bloat. So here's my conversation with Constant Ijuma, VP of SEO at Penske Media. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I feel like we got a great topic for today. When I saw this kind of come through for the upcoming episodes, I kind of jumped on it because I feel like it's a really critical factor that maybe doesn't get as much attention as I think it probably should get. So maybe just first to start off for the listeners, what is content bloat and why should we be concerned or aware of this in SEO?
So to me, content bloat is when you have a website that has accumulated a ton of content over a long period of time, but if you are focused on the new content that's being published to the site, people have a tendency to forget the old stuff that's on the site. But the thing is that Google is seeing all of that content and it's evaluating your site based on everything that is available to it at any given time with any given algorithm update that is rolled out. So while you may think you are creating high quality content right now, if you are not addressing the old content that is on your site and making sure that that also is high quality and still valuable to users today, you could potentially be creating a situation where your site is still vulnerable to future algorithm updates because the algorithms are basically looking at the site in its entirety and not necessarily narrowing it down based on the freshness of the content or based on the most recently published content. The reason why this is a specific area of interest to me is because I right now oversee a number of sites that are quite mature. They've been online for 10 to 20 years. And because we're very sensitive to updates from Google, changes that are happening on the search side, we have to be hyper aware about our content library and make sure that we're keeping an eye on things that were published in the past in order to remain compliant to what Google is demanding today. So I've had several rounds of doing deep audits and evaluations and surfacing low quality content, and then having to make a decision about, do we keep this content? Do we involve the editorial team in updating this content in order to bring it up to the standard that is being required by Google today? Or do we no index it? Or do we just straight out delete it and get rid of it and basically start with a clean slate? So that is what I consider to be content bloat. And to me, it's really a matter of having an awareness of your entire content library and not being exclusively hyper-focused on what is currently being published to the site.
That's such a good point. And I think it's like one of the elements that kind of separates like enterprise SEO to, you know, SEO on like smaller websites, where smaller websites, you know, this topic is probably not as common. It's probably not something even that's in like, you know, the top list of concerns to have. It's just more of, yeah, Google saw, crawled it, indexed it, looks good. But I think it becomes so much more of a factor when you're dealing with these larger websites. Now, kind of like going through the process. So you mentioned in the last piece is you're needing to have that understanding of like the entire content library and looking at the site for like the entire ecosystem, not just the new kind of shiny objects that are coming out. What can you share with the listeners as far as how to go about, you know, taking inventory of the website to make those determinations of what is adding value versus, you know, potentially being detrimental to the performance of the site?
I would say one place to start is to do a comprehensive audit of your site. It doesn't really matter what the size of the site is or how long it's been around. If you haven't engaged in that particular exercise before, then it's probably time to do something like that. So we use Lumar, which was previously known as DeepCrawler. We've also used Screaming Frog to do a crawl of our sites to basically evaluate what is it that these third-party tools are seeing that may be harmful, or, you know, are there any broken links, broken pages? Are there things that could be impacting the user experience that we may not be aware of because we are basically not looking under the hood on a very regular basis? So that's one step that you can take to basically start to suss out, are there pieces of content on the site that may not be as optimal as they could be because we're not looking under the hood on a very regular basis? Another thing to do once that's been taken care of is looking in your Google Analytics and getting a sense of, are there areas of the site that are not getting as much traffic as they used to? For us, we look at that and also look at content by published date. So if there are things that were published to the site 10 years ago, maybe we'll dig into those to see, is the content quality up to today's standards? And if it isn't, what can we do about it? Is it time to basically create a project out of having somebody drill into those pieces of content and say, yes, this is worth updating. No, this isn't worth updating. Or this was our publishing practice or our publishing standards 10 years ago. And maybe that piece of content is no longer relevant for today. So we can either take it down from the site or we can no index it if we feel like it provides some kind of historical value. So a lot of the sites in our portfolio are news sites, and news is something that is important from a historical perspective. We're basically witnesses to what is happening to the world today. And so people could be looking to one of our publications to get a better understanding of what has happened in years past. So we understand the value of that type of content, but can we create a place for it in such a way that while users are able to access it, perhaps the search engines are blind to it because we don't think they provide value today, right? So then we can make a decision about how to go about isolating those pieces of content so that we still have access to them and have them available to people, but not necessarily expose them to the search engines or risk being negatively impacted by them being exposed to the search engines. I think traffic is also a really important area to look at. If something hasn't been getting traffic for a really long time, it may be an indication that that piece of content is no longer relevant today. If it is something that is relevant, maybe it's due for an update. So somebody needs to get in there and invest the time in basically figuring out what the updated information is in order to then update this piece of content to make it appealing for the search engines to rank again today. So for somebody like me, I'm working with sites that have hundreds and thousands of pages. So scale is always a challenge. And so we basically have to strategize and determine what KPIs are the most critical to look at before we start delving into taking action towards those particular pieces of content. So perhaps an easy way to evaluate what the cutoff point is looking at posts based on word count. Now, we know Google has said that word count isn't necessarily the best way to go about evaluating the value of a piece of content. However, I've found it to be useful because I can immediately say this article was published in, 2005. Back in those days, it was fine to publish an article that is one paragraph long or 50 words long. But if I am crawling my WordPress and I'm seeing a ton of posts that are below 50 words in terms of a word count, then I know I can immediately go and start evaluating those posts and start making a decision about what's worth keeping, what's worth throwing away, or what's worth no indexing or archiving in a different area of the site. So you basically have to determine what the easiest way is for you to surface what you consider low quality content or content that may be causing bloat, and also figuring out what action to take against them. It's something that could take a pretty good amount of time depending on the volume of content that you're dealing with. For some sites, it's going to be easy. For other sites, it's going to be a little more complicated, just depending on the vertical that that site is covering.
Absolutely. And I think a way sometimes that I'll describe it to others is it's like pruning a tree. And, any plant, can kind of get overgrown, and you have some areas. And if it's, cutting off some of this, let's call it dead weight, then allows more energy or more growth to happen in the other parts of the tree that you're really focusing on. So it's, it's not just saying oh, we're going to reduce our traffic because we're cutting pages. And I've seen in a lot of cases, especially if someone hasn't gone through this cleaning for a while, you can get really strong uplifts on performance by just kind of doing this type of spring cleaning or pruning. I think you brought up some interesting points, though, or challenges that SEOs are faced. Because I think in a scenario of an e-commerce site, it becomes a little more straightforward, where it's great, I can look at my combination of filtered category pages, and eventually there's going to be that cutoff point that there's low or no inventory that matches those parameters. And so I applied so many filters that I got to a page that had no matching products, and therefore it's a low quality page. In the news and media, you're in a more challenging space because the same principles are applying, where you're hey, I don't want to flood the index. I don't want, Google to be looking at too many pages that are low quality. But then you have this kind of topical authority play. You also have this, which pieces maybe could be refreshed and have, they're underperforming, but they have that future potential. So I feel like you really quickly get into this gray zone within the news and media space that makes it quite a bit more challenging. And for SEOs that may be in a similar industry or vertical, and they're thinking about this and they're like, okay, I've gone through, I've identified some pages, but I'm not sure. I'm maybe they're a little nervous about it. And you made some comments of using more than one, data point in this. So you mentioned traffic, but then also combination of word count. What recommendations would you have for the listeners on getting to a point maybe that they have more confidence in deleting or removing pages?
I think the best advice is to start very, very, very conservatively. If you've never done this before, then it's perfectly understandable why you would be afraid to remove even one piece of content, right? Somebody has spent time, they've invested their attention, they've done research to create this post in the past. And, you know, it's possible that since the time that that post was created up until now, things may have happened to the site that changed that page, whether it be a migration, a redesign. You know, in my experience, I've found that when those types of changes are made to websites, it tends to affect individual content pages because then the user experience is impacted, images have dropped off, outbound links are no longer working the way that they're supposed to. I mean, there's so many factors that could have an effect here. But I think starting really conservatively is going to mitigate a lot of the nervousness. For me, it's very easy for me to look at a page that was created maybe 5 or 10 years ago, and there was supposed to be an image that is no longer there. There's a link to a video that's no longer working. There's words that are missing because maybe there was a migration that kind of went awry at some point. Or I land on a page and there's absolutely nothing on the page because, again, something got lost in a past migration process, right? So to me, those are very easy to flag and say, I cannot in good conscience stand in front of this piece of content and defend its existence on my site. So it's very easy for me to say, let's get rid of it. If Google looked at this today, I know that my site would be perceived negatively because this one piece of content is something that even I don't think is of the best quality. So immediately, like, that's a pretty easy decision to make. I think if you start there, remove the content, give it a little time to see what impact it has had on your traffic, on your visibility, on your authority, if you are monitoring keyword clusters to basically get a sense of if your authority or rankings for those particular keywords have dropped off. But if there's been no impact, then you know that those pages were not really adding anything to your site in the first place. You can be conservative also by removing a smaller amount of content and basically scheduling it so that you incrementally take things down and give yourself time in between to gauge what the impact is, to evaluate what happens after whatever the next algorithm update is, and then also monitor your traffic as you are doing this. So I think there are steps that you can take to really allow yourself to build confidence and know that you are doing the right thing. But if there's things on the site that even to you are indefensible, then it's a pretty good gut check to say, okay, I don't think it's right for this piece of content to be here. I can't defend it. It does make sense for me to take it down. There's risks. Obviously, SEO is not the only stakeholder when it comes to determining what's happening to content on the site. There's editorial teams, there's business leadership that you kind of have to get buy-in from everyone who touches the site. But I think we do have data that can support the culling of a number of posts depending on their performance and what value we've determined that they are currently adding to the site.
Absolutely. And I think it's a great call out for the SEOs where it's like you can use different metrics and different data points to kind of like hone in on where to look. And then like I'm going back a bit more, but it's like I really like the example that you gave of like word count. Great. We all know Google said it's not like the best measurement of it. And then it's not like something that I'm going to follow blindly, but it could be a really strong indicator of some potentially thin pages that are worth looking at. And so you're taking those data points, you're getting it down to more manageable group to look at, and then using more intuition to give the confidence on making these calls. And I think it's also a really important one to just reiterate again on is you don't have to do this in one batch. And it's actually recommended to do this in waves. And do a test one, watch how the website responds to it. You get a positive signal, you can keep increasing. And I think that I would probably say is maybe one of the biggest takeaways that I would recommend out of this conversation is doing things incrementally. Because there is risk behind this, but I think the reward is really substantial. So it is something that's worth kind of digging deeper into. From we've gone through, we understand why it's important. We've understand a little bit of how to hone in on the areas or the high suspect areas that may warrant kind of like removal. Once we found areas that we want to trim, what advice can you give of either how to remove it? Like, do you have recommendations between, in your words, like hiding from Google versus like actually removing it and, you know, showing a 404? Like, once I get to the great, I don't want this content indexer, I don't want Google spending time on this, where do I go now from there?
The setup you just created is great, because then you have to start batching things based on, is this a pile of content that I know I absolutely cannot stand behind? In fact, it's embarrassing for anybody to come across this if they land on my website, versus another batch where maybe this content is not of value today, but I believe it could be of value to people who know my website, to my core users, to people who perhaps will find value in the historical context that this piece of content provides. And for this particular batch, maybe I will make the decision to no index this or archive it, whatever archiving means. Archiving can be putting it behind a paywall, making it inaccessible to Google, making it accessible only via internal site search as opposed to Google search. So there's a few ways of approaching how to manage that second batch of content. But to your point as well, this is not something that should happen in one go or in one fell swoop. I think you have to be very careful and very thoughtful and very strategic in how you are batching these things and how you go about removing them. Because for the ones that you do choose to take down, taking down that content could be looking at them based on theme and determining that, oh, this is a content cluster that is essentially about the same subject matter. So is there an opportunity here for me to take these 10 articles and consolidate them into one really robust piece of content and therefore update it and make it valuable for a user who could be coming to the site today? Or is this really something that I've decided isn't worth having at all? And if that's the case, then the decision to take it down is pretty clear and it's pretty obvious. Once that has been determined, then it's a matter of, am I taking these down and 301 redirecting that URL to another URL that is as close a match to it as possible? Am I allowing that page to 404? Am I allowing it to 410? Because I've decided that, you know, the stuff we published 10 years ago versus what we published today, it's so different thematically that I don't even want to be associated with that old stuff. So I'm just going to go ahead and 410 it and tell Google, just wipe that from your memory. That's what I'll use that for. And then also keeping track, like if you are using Google Analytics, making sure that the batch that you do choose to throw away is no longer getting traffic today. Because if it is getting some traffic, it means that there might be some potential to update that post, repolish it, and make it something that could potentially still bring traffic to the site. So this is not about making the decision to get rid of things just because you feel like it. It has to be supported by data somehow. Otherwise, you're just shooting yourself in the foot and you're ending up hurting the site in a way that you didn't anticipate because you didn't take the appropriate measures to ensure that it's still getting visibility, it's still getting traffic, it's still helping build your authority around certain types of queries.
Time for a 1 minute break to hear from our sponsor, Previsible. So you're looking for SEO help, and you got a couple of options. You could start replying to spam from agencies that claim they can get you to rank number one on Google. You can pay an hourly rate for a consultant who will inevitably nickel and dime you with hourly charges. Or you can work with a cookie cutter agency to quickly launch a strategy-less project with low success rate. None of those sound very good, now do they? Well, that's where Previsible's integrated consulting model comes in. Previsible draws from a collective 40 years of SEO and digital marketing experience to unlock your organic growth opportunities. They build custom solutions that combine strategy, technical expertise, content, and reporting to effectively operationalize SEO for your business. Previsible's four-stage approach ensures that your SEO programs thrive by starting off with a strategy-first approach. Then they support you in your efforts to create quality content, help you identify technical issues, and most importantly, they'll work with your cross-functional teams to integrate your SEO strategies to make sure that your SEO budget actually drives results, not just your agency's bottom line. So join brands like Yelp, eBay, Canva, Atlassian, Square, all who rely on the SEO consultants at Previsible. For more information, go to previsible.io. That's Previsible, previsible.io.
I couldn't agree with that more, that there is not one answer to this. And I like your point on, you know, you're making groups and what your solution to each group is probably going to be very different. And I think it's also a really important reminder that you should also follow back up on these things. Like, I've seen two cases where, you know, maybe someone puts a no index tag being like, yeah, this will kind of make Google not look at it. But then you go back to the crawl log files and it's like, yeah, no, they still have been visiting that page and looking at it, and it's not achieving the same point. So it's like, I think there's also cases that sometimes you might put in one strategy or one piece, and then if you revisit it, there's sometimes like, okay, that wasn't enough, we need to escalate this, or like, we want to do something more to maybe like force Google's hand to remove URLs from the index. So I think there's a bunch of different, I think, reasons why there may be a different approach to it, but doing it in these batches where you can have a more direct solution to it, and then also remembering to fall back on it to, did this play out the way that I intended it to, is a super, super critical factor.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, also looking at the backlink profile for the site and identifying those posts that actually do have backlinks that may be really, really valuable to your domain, and making a decision about, okay, maybe I will isolate those posts and update them rather than removing them from the site or allowing them to 404, because I don't want to lose that really powerful backlink that is pointing to my domain. So again, like, you really have to come up with a pretty robust checklist, have an idea of what the pros and the cons are of either decision that you choose to make, and also ask yourself what value each of those batches should be bringing to the site, what they could be bringing to the site, or what you stand to lose if you get rid of a certain batch of content.
Absolutely. Now, I got one more question for you. Well, I mean, sometimes when I say this too, there could be follow-ups, but I'll try to keep it to one more question for you. And I feel like we've been talking about this in the lens of one large enterprise site. Now, when I look into Penske, and just in case like the listeners aren't familiar of the brand or the company, you guys have Rolling Stone, Billboard, Variety, like, you have so many different domains under this umbrella that you're responsible for. So you're juggling with the scale volume of one large domain, and now you're responsible for, I don't know, and how many domains actually? Let me start with that. How many domains are you looking over right now?
About 20.
Okay. So 20 domains. I'm going to guess that of those 20 domains, probably safe to say that most are, or a good chunk, are over 100,000 URLs. So you have a huge scale piece. How are you thinking about managing this across so many pages and so many domains. Like, is this, are you doing deep dives on individual properties, or do you have more of like an ongoing monitoring system? Like, how does it work at scale, like what you're faced with?
Yeah, we do both. We do both. It depends on the specific site, what the needs of the business are at that time, and whether or not there are specific issues that have come up, which then, I guess, escalates the urgency of having to do things like a site audit or coming up with a strategy for expanding that site's visibility on Google. So yes, we periodically have deep audits where internally we have a process whereby there's a team assigned to going in, doing a site crawl, evaluating the site's traffic, looking at various different categories on the site and looking at the content being published to those categories to make sure that that content is endemic to that brand. And that if somebody lands on a piece of content on, let's say, Rolling Stone, for instance, that it makes sense for it to be on Rolling Stone. So it's important for us to be able to make those types of evaluations because, as you know, we are having algorithm updates on a fairly regular basis, and we constantly have to keep an eye on how Google is responding to our content. We also have SEOs assigned to each of these brands, and they're working with editorial teams on a daily basis to make sure that new content that is being published to the site is optimized appropriately. And if we find that through one of our monitoring tools, whether it be, you know, Google Search Console or specific categories that we are monitoring on Google Analytics, we can act immediately if we're noticing that, you know, our traffic or our metrics are going awry, or if they're going in a direction that is unexpected for us. We do a pretty robust analysis to make sure that we aren't inadvertently harming ourselves. If it's something that we've identified as happening on Google, then we start looking at our competitors. We start looking at what other people are saying and what they're experiencing to see if it's a more systematic issue rather than something that is specific to one of our websites or one of our verticals or even that topic area.
Now, I know I said that was my last, but you gave me one more question in there. I feel like it's more often than not, these type of initiatives tend to come up after an algorithm update. Mm. Or it's like there's, because I think sometimes it can be that like small leak that maybe is like people aren't as aware, but it's holding things back, but it's not very visible because it's not like you're losing, but it's just not gaining that full potential. And then a lot of times when algorithm update comes in, there's a reconfiguration, you see something a little more obvious. For those that maybe are digging deeper into this, they're dealing with it today, what insight can you give or what recommendations would you give to be thinking about like timeline to impact? Like, is this something that would be noticeable relatively quickly, or is this something that, you know, you need to give a little more time for it to kind of surface the impact of these efforts? Like, what expectation setting can you help with the audience?
I found it to be both depending on the specific site that you are dealing with. For some sites, when an algorithm update occurs, let's say it takes between anywhere from a week to even up to a month for an algorithm update to complete its rolling out, sometimes you can tell that you've been hurt within the first week. And then sometimes the decay is so gradual that you can't call it while the update itself is still happening. And you may not really be able to see the impact until a month or two later. Sometimes even up to 6 months later, you look back and at the traffic and think to yourself, ah, okay, so that update happened then and we haven't had a rebound. So I think there's something about this particular update that impacted our site. And so therefore, I should dig into what that specific update was about and see if our site is continuing to follow the guidelines that have been prescribed by Google, depending on the specific algorithm update. as you know, there's different types of updates. So there's the product review updates, there's the review updates, there are core updates. The helpful content update is a fun new one that's been around for a couple of years. And that one was actually a bigger deal than I initially thought that it was going to be. So depending on which specific ones come out, this is why consistent monitoring is so important. I and my team are monitoring traffic, just not overall traffic to the site, but traffic by category, sometimes traffic by subcategories, to have a better understanding of, has this section been impacted because of the quality of the content here in this specific area of the site? Or has the entire site been impacted because we had a core update and Google was looking at the entire site and basically re-ranking things based on it needing to update its index to accommodate new sites or competitors who are doing a slightly better job or meeting its quality standards a little bit better than you used to. So based on that, I think once you've determined that you have been negatively impacted, it's really, really important to look at who you've been replaced by. If you were on page one for a particular topic or a certain type of query, who is now ranking where you used to rank for that term? And look at Google's guidelines for that specific algorithm update and really go down the checklist and ask, okay, this competitor seems to be doing these things that Google has outlined here. Let me look at my own content and really do a gut check and ask myself, am I still meeting these standards? And if the answer is no, then you kind of have a clear idea of what to do next, which is do better. And if it's still unclear to you, then you know you continuously have to evaluate and kind of turn other stones to figure out what could potentially be going on. Because part of SEO is you really just being a detective. I can't tell you how many issues I've come across that I've had to like turn every stone to try and figure out what is going on because the problem wasn't immediately obvious to me. And that happens. That happens all the time, actually. But once you figure it out, it's like, oh, eureka. I think we also forget that Google is ranking things based on hundreds of different signals. And so even if you are compliant in one area, there could be 100 other things that you don't really have visibility into. And so you can't properly diagnose what exactly the issue is. And if it's like an authority issue or a backlink issue or, you know, 100 other things that are not that obvious, then it may take a little longer to figure out what the problem is and what action to take in order to implement an effective solution.
Absolutely. Now, final question I had, well, I mean, this third time I've said final question, but I mean it this time. The final question I have is, with these advancements, with AI, machine-generated content, like I feel like there is a natural overlap to this question of page bloat because, you know, costs and barriers are potentially lowering. You have mixed messages from Google's PR side. So kind of like, where do you see this going in this kind of intersection of AI and SEO? And how it relates to the conversation we've been having today?
It's hard to say because in all the time that I've been in this space, Google has sort of been running the show. And we as SEOs or we as publishers have kind of had to adapt to the changes that Google has made. Whether it be, okay, we're going to be mobile first. Okay, here comes AMP and everybody needs to get on AMP. Otherwise, you're not going to get the visibility that you want. Here comes Core Web Vitals. Everybody, you guys work on that because if you don't, then your competitors are going to outrank you or outperform you. Now with AI and with SGE, I feel like it's just kind of a continuation of that same type of conversation. And from Google's perspective, they've said from day one, we are here to provide content to users in as efficient a way as possible. And so therefore, we are here to service users and we're not here necessarily to service publishers or people who are providing that content. So from their perspective, they are helping users. And from our perspective, we feel like perhaps they are taking something away from us because we're doing a lot of hard work putting content together and delivering it to users. And unfortunately, we need Google because they are the ones who are connecting our content to the audience. That has always been the way that things have been set up. And unfortunately, we haven't really figured out how to get around that, how to completely eliminate Google from the equation. I think what Google is now pushing us to do is really figuring out ways of building our own audience and making sure that our own websites are basically things that are being directly accessed to users. So perhaps it's not just, oh, I'm very knowledgeable in this area and my brand or my domain authority is really powerful. And so therefore, whatever it is that I publish is going to do really well on Google. Now it's like, okay, so maybe Google is now a competitor of mine. How do I improve my content and my user experience so that people automatically know to come to me directly? How do I create a community on my own website? Because that's what Google is also saying, like this first person kind of experience. EEAT is a big deal because it's really drilling into, is this content being created by a real person? Does this person have authority? Do they have expertise in this area? Can they prove that they know what they're talking about? I think a lot of people are already kind of set up in that way. And I think the next step is figuring out how do we make ourselves as easily accessible or as known to our audience as Google is known to everybody on the planet. So building community organically and being less reliant on Google to be the facilitator or the deliverer of everyone who gets to see your site.
I couldn't agree more with that. I think you've added a ton of value to the listeners here. Like, it's a very, like, bringing it back to the topic at the beginning of the episode, page bloat, I think, can be a really, really critical factor and consideration for those enterprise, really large websites out there. But also being at this crossroad of what's going to happen as the barriers of page creation are lowered more and more. What's the impact of the potential page bloat and how Google responds to that? But also, Constance, like your point on diversification and aiming towards that user and aiming almost as a North Star as retention goes for the website and getting people to come back to you direct, in my opinion, is also going to be the same type of activities that Google also will be looking for to reward in search. So I think it's an interesting crossroads, but look forward to having more of these conversations with you in the future.
And a special thanks to Previsible for sponsoring this podcast. If you're looking for support with all of your SEO needs, Previsible's integrated consulting model is there for you. They draw on a collective 40 years of SEO and digital marketing experience to help you unlock your organic search and growth opportunities. So join brands like Yelp, eBay, Canva, Atlassian, and Square, all who rely on SEO consultants at Previsible. For more information, go to previsible.io. That's previsible.io. And a special thanks to Ahrefs for sponsoring this podcast. Monitoring your website used to require multiple expensive tools, but that's not the case anymore thanks to Ahrefs, because they just launched their Ahrefs Webmaster Tools product, which monitors your SEO health, helps you keep track of your backlinks, and gives you the insight into what keywords are performing for free. So check out Ahrefs Webmaster Tools at ahrefs.com/AWT. That's Ahrefs, ahrefs.com/AWT.
So with that, that wraps up this episode of the Voice of Search podcast. Thanks to Constance Ijuma, VP of SEO at Penske Media, for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about Constance, you can find a link to her LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or you can visit her company's website at pmc.com and all the other domains that they have. And if you didn't get a chance to take notes while listening to the podcast, head over to voiceofsearch.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes, contact information for our guests, and also you can send us your topic selections, your SEO questions, or apply to be a guest speaker on the Voice of Search podcast. Of course, you can always find us on social media, where our show handle is at Voices of Search on X or Twitter. And also reach out to me. Find me on LinkedIn. Give me your SEO questions. Always look to network. So give me a shout on LinkedIn. And if you haven't subscribed yet and want a daily stream of SEO and content marketing insights in your podcast feed, we're going to publish a new episode every workday. So hit that subscribe button in your podcast app and we'll show up in your feed in the next business day. With that, that wraps up this episode, Voice of Search podcast. Look forward to seeing you guys in the next episode.